Dr. Susan Calls, and I'm here today with my guest, Stephen Martin, who is an astronomer, educator, and writer, and has put together a wonderful compilation work called Cosmic Conversations, Dialogues on the Nature of the Universe and the Search for Reality. Stephen Martin has featured interviews with a number of different leaders, both spiritual, scientific, social, and future thinkers, and this great question, what is the universe and how do we relate to it? Thank you for joining us. I appreciate you joining us on short notice, as my guest for today had had to cancel. He's going to reschedule, however.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
So where are you calling from?
I'm from southern Massachusetts.
Oh, great. Great. My brother is in that part of the world. He was went to MIT in Princeton and is up there running Aerodyne, which is a corporation studying the high altitude, global warming, and other things. I called him the other day. I said, Charles, I think we're not really experiencing global warming as so much as global cooling. and he laughed and said, yeah, there might very well be an ice age in the next 1,000 years.
Wow, that's important to know.
It is, isn't it? Well, I was watching a TV show on, I think, the History Channel, and actually global warming and global cooling are intimately related, and global cooling comes out of global warming. So.
That's right. Well, I mean, they lump them together as climate change.
Right,
and I guess the understanding is that things are essentially changing, and we're a part of that change.
That's right, and I think the whole idea of this is very interesting because, you know, a portion of the scientific community is saying that the humans are responsible for global warming, and yet other scientists have come out and said no, actually, all the planets in the solar system are warming. And so it's interesting to me that humans often, have a inflated sense of how we actually interact on a personal level with the universe. And your book has really explored that to a great degree. It may be that we don't really interact on the ego-based level that much, but collectively, through consciousness, we actually interact a great deal.
Exactly. There's a lot happening behind the scenes that we're not always aware of. And
right.
We're just discovering our interconnectedness and interrelatedness in some very new and exciting ways.
Well, I love how you've synthesized the various aspects of science and spirituality, the leaders in many of these fields, for this cosmic conversation. Can you tell me a little bit about where this idea came from? To write the book for you.
Well, sure. You know, I've been an astronomer for pretty much most of my professional life, and I suddenly came to the realization some years ago that I've studied the universe my whole life, and yet I still have no idea what it actually is.
Right.
I mean, it's very humbling to come to that realization.
Yeah.
Well, what is it? I mean, is it science? Is it spirituality?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you know, what these indigenous people say? I mean, what actually is it? And I realized I didn't know. And so I thought it would be interesting, since I didn't know, to ask experts in all these different fields to find out what they thought.
It seems like there's two different universes we're talking about, too. The one that's out there that astronomers study, and then there's one that's internal that spiritual practices lead you to explore. And that's very interesting because the point at which the point that is in the middle of those is very much our ego or personality. You know, it's almost like we're the dividing line between those two universes.
Very, very much so. And, you know, as you said, I mean, we're sort of the dividing line between the sort of inner and outer worlds. And as you said, you know, our ego is that kind of that division.
Right.
And but really, when you go into it, that division, you know, is really in our minds.
It is.
Because the inner world and the outer world are intimately interrelated.
That's right.
And, for example, we can look at the universe and see it through the eyes of spirit, see it through spiritual energy, through spiritual healing, through all the different qualities that the spiritual traditions of the world talk about, we can also look at the world around us and ourselves in it from the perspective of matter, all these wonderful insights that science has brought us. And one of my contributors to the book described it as kind of the two sides of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
We've got science on one side and the spiritual view of the world on the other side. And they're both there, but just imagine that, you know, you shave that coin so it's thinner and thinner and thinner until there's no coin there. I mean, it's really a paradox. How could it be described by science and religion and both be correct?
And isn't it interesting that many of the world's spiritual traditions emphasize that you have to get away from the idea of a separated self or dissolving of the ego, and many of them have great ways to do that. Meditation, there's all sorts of service where you go out and serve others rather than, you know, attend to your own needs. And so almost any way in which you want to relate, you can decrease this ego sense of self-separation, and then perhaps that's how you join the two worlds, and perhaps that's how you become a master of both worlds, where you can go within and then project outward and change physical reality like some of the masters have been able to do.
I think that's right, and I think what you're pointing to is very important, and that it all begins with our idea that things are separate.
Right.
We are separate from the universe, that this idea of separation. And, you know, the spiritual traditions of the world talk about this, that, you know, that separateness is really an illusion, that the world is really a unity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that our science is catching up with that, because many of the scientists I spoke to were also talking along those same lines. It's like, oh, we're not separate from the world. What we do actually has deep effects with the world. We're in interrelationship with the world.
Would you mind explaining for our listeners a little bit about the idea that scientists are only able to see about 4% of what's out there? I think that's an important place to start, because that will show people that their perceptual reality, you know, when they think they're seeing the whole picture, they're really not. And I think that's a good place to start, so that we can start to explain to them that the ego is not all-seeing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is, you know, really at the forefront of modern science, is that we discovered that 96% of the universe is made up of something called dark energy and dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no idea what it is, but it's shaping the world around us.
Right.
Now, that leaves 4% of the universe that we can see with our eyes, with our senses, and with our instruments. I think that's very interesting that we're in this place where we're at such a crucial time in the culture, and we're discovering that we can only see 4% of what's out there. At least with our current science. I mean, that may change.
Right.
And one of the people I interviewed for the book, Duane Elgin, talks about this as the 4% solution.
Mm-hmm.
He says that materialism, you know, the view that the world is, you know, all material and energy and there's no spirit, is only 4% of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
We need to sort of look beyond that. We need to look for spiritual solutions, for much broader ways of thinking, if we're going to come to grips with the kinds of things that we're working with our culture and the world right now.
I think it's very interesting that Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who actually my video production company did a series with him that was very good. Dr. Mitchell talks about the idea that it's looking like the world is more of a giant hologram than anything else. And then I like to relate that back to what we see in Buddhism, the idea coming out of that spiritual tradition that what you see out in the outside universe is actually illusionary, which a hologram is illusionary. And it's so fascinating to me that, like in this last these last elections in the last few years, we've actually had holograms on CNN of people being projected in to speak. Isn't that fascinating? I mean, we're actually having holograms, on the TV screens and the idea of holograms in movies and. I think we're coming to the point where we can really almost wrap our mind about what this illusion might look like.
It's almost like we're creating in the world outside of us what we experience inside of us.
Right.
Especially with, you know, these 3D movies coming out and
like virtual reality. They're great, by the way. Avatar.
I love the experience of just being immersed in it.
I know.
It's like this virtual world. And yet, from the perspective of these spiritual traditions, they say that, you know, the world is really like that. It's almost like an illusion. It's almost like a hologram. And that when you see the real nature of it, you can see right through it.
That's so true. I had a friend, Michael Rice, who used an example in his lectures. He said, say you go to the, you know, part of some island somewhere where the natives have never seen anything but living on their island, and you project on the wall a bowl of fruit, and a picture of a bowl of fruit, and you ask the natives to move the bowl. Well, they'll go over to the screen and try to move the bowl, but of course nothing will move.
Mm-hmm.
And all you do is move the projector. And I think that's a good metaphor for what I sense is really going on in the world. Consciousness projects into these various places, be it the third dimension, the dream state, perhaps even the fifth dimension. It projects into and puts something on the screen of your perception, but that is a hologram. That's not real. It may be in three dimensions, but it's still not real. And imagine if we really, really understood the nature of this projection, we would go back to source and simply change, you know, move the projector. And then things in this third dimensional reality would shift. And I think that's how the masters perform the feats, where they hold out their hand and a gold coin or a ring or a, in the case of Sai Baba, ash forms. I think that's how they do it. I really do. I think that they go back to a place of projection of consciousness, which many of your authors would say is like going back into the void and then projecting back out and then changing what you project.
I think that's probably entirely true. In fact, we get stuck on the appearances, right? We think the form is really the essence of the object.
So as long as you're in the third dimension, trying to push things with your mind within the third dimension, nothing happens.
Right. Right.
See, but you've got to understand how we are connected, and you have to go inward. That's why meditation is so important, because meditation is actually listening to the forces that are probably creating what's in your third dimensional reality. And they can tell you all sorts of weird things. I know I was on my way to work one day, and I heard very clearly in the car that someone was going to steal the picture out of the patient bathroom. And, of course, I said to myself, well, nobody would ever do that. And then that day somebody did.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Very detailed. Yeah.
So
I would encourage, and I do encourage people to listen every day, even if they don't know what they're listening for.
That's very true.
It is very true,
because we don't know what we're listening for.
We don't.
And that's all the more reason to listen.
It is. And
yeah.
We've listened, you probably know more about this than I do, but we've listened out into the universe. I've always found it interesting. So much money and time and effort has been spent on trying to send messages out into the outer universe and get a response back, whereas if you study it, there's a huge amount of information through multidimensional teachers such as Seth and, you know, the Course in Miracles, and, you know, just you can go on and on and on about the inner teachers writing books through humans and giving us all this information, just a wealth of information about what the universe is really made up of.
Yeah, it's amazing that we have sort of this channel or this fountain of information coming to us from the deeper universe within ourselves.
Right.
And if we can just, you know, tune into that and sit still enough to actually receive that, it would be a different world.
I think it would be. I think it would be a safer world. I just wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants. I don't know whether you know, but I'm a plastic surgeon. And in it, I suggest that rather than just putting, you know, the corporations paying for experiments that are not real, or studies that are not, that can be slanted and miss things, and trying to unduly influence the FDA into accepting things that really aren't that safe. that we utilize this information. We utilize those among us who can bring in information about the potential dangers of drugs, devices, whatever, cellular telephones, you know. We need to prevent these problems before they cause widespread devastation, you know, the increase in brain tumors that is occurring, the increase mm-hmm. in cancer and problems with fertility. I think we could go within and reshape our science using this wealth of information that can come from within.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can also tune into our own sources of guidance within and find out, well, what's right for our bodies right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have patients coming who have been told by at least 20 or 25 doctors that they're not sick from their breast implants, but that still small voice within tells them they are. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes their mother tells them they are. That's the other thing in your book, the connectedness in our first degree relatives is very, very strong, this sense of oneness.
Very much so.
This intuition that your mother often knows what's wrong with you before you do. Or the tribal elders or whoever.
Yeah. Well, that's an important thread in the indigenous traditions, is having that connection with the ancestors.
Right.
And that, you know, the
it
wisdom
is.
And the guidance flows from them. And to have a strong connection with them is really, you know, a sign of a healthy culture for them. And a source of guidance and healing. They call on the ancestors when they do ritual.
Right.
That's
Get information.
Of, yes, exactly.
That's protective.
Of course.
And I think right now, with what we're facing, we have economic threats, we have health threats, we have, you know, rumors of war, you know, the civil unrest threats. The leaders would do well to go within and to utilize those who can go within and get information rather than just haphazardly attack the problem with fairly expensive solutions, in my mind. I think, you know, like look at healthcare, how expensive healthcare has become, and
right.
yet we're not all that healthy on a worldwide scale.
No, that's true. And I think what you've been pointing to is, you know, the need to sort of recognize there's more dimensions to our world than what we normally realize is a very important one. Because if you're just trying to solve, you know, a three-dimensional world with three-dimensional problems, it's not going to work because it's not truly a three-dimensional world.
That's like what Einstein said, that the solution to the problem can never be found at the same level of consciousness that created it.
Exactly. I was just thinking.
The same one,
end
yeah.
End quote.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that's right. Well, I think, you know, you start off with the scientists, and many of the scientists are fairly enlightened, obviously. But they're coming from a scientific, third-dimensional, materialistic, at least background. I mean, that's their education. That's what they're coming out of. Then you go on to speak with, of course, Fred Allen Wolf, who is someone who has kind of bridged science and spirituality. And then you go on to speak with Dean Radin. Now, Dean is, of course, one of the researchers at Noetic Science. We've held the Noetic Science community group in Atlanta since '96, so I'm very fond of Noetic Science. I think it's a wonderful creation for the consciousness studies. And Dean is a remarkable scientist. I think he's very good. And then you go on to interview some of the spiritual leaders, who also are fairly well grounded in science, it seems. I mean, they really tried to bring the two together.
Yeah.
And then you go into the the shamanistic views.
The indigenous
views, which of course incorporate that idea that we at least get our energy from one source, and we can communicate with that energy and bring it into our not just personal life but also social life. And then the view from the culture is what gives me hope, is that perhaps we can translate this intensely personal spiritual practice that many of us are engaging in right now into something that can help the planet and help our relations and help, you know, help bridge science and spirituality.
Exactly. And especially with these cultural creatives, they're the ones who are living the insights from both the scientific and the spiritual and the indigenous traditions. They're really taking it out into the world and on the street and bringing it together in a very practical way, as you said.
Right. So, what would you like people to take away from the book? I mean, what are some of the major major insights that you got across all of the scientific, spiritual, social, and indigenous views?
Sure, sure. Well, I think one of the main insights is that we live in a multidimensional universe.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just approach it from one perspective and think that we have a good grasp on what's happening. We really need to recognize all these diverse perspectives as really valid approaches to this, you know, same mysterious reality that we're involved in. And so our culture has been very much focused on science and particularly materialism for, you know, many decades and centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been tremendously successful. But at some point we've gone to the extreme saying that, you know, the material world is the only true world. And I think that really denies a lot of helpful solutions that we could be considering with the global problems we're facing. You know, as you would say, on the more spiritual level,
mm-hmm.
The more indigenous, the more sustainability levels, we need to consider all these possibilities. And so we can't just relate to the universe in one particular way.
And I think it's valuable to take a look at not just the multidimensional universe like is perhaps suggested by superstring theory and even quantum physics, but also take a look at the what we're able to do to communicate across dimensions. And then there's the other way, communicate across time. It's almost like there's two different things going on here that we can look at. There's some very interesting conversations in your book about time and what it is and what it isn't, and you know, is it illusionary? Does time really exist in the greater view of things, or do all things exist simultaneously in what we would call eternity? And that's really what clairvoyance and precognition and all these other things that Dean Radin studies is all about, is that when you can back up into the eternity aspect. And Fred Allen Wolf did a very good book on that. Did you read his book, showing people?
Well, there's the Yoga of Time Travel.
Right, right. He does a good job of showing people how they can get out of the third dimension and look at it from higher dimensions.
Exactly, and show how that's backed up, you know, with fundamental science as well.
Right, yeah, he brings science and spirituality together in that way, which is really good. But I've always been really fascinated. Some of the spiritual work I was involved in was actually going into the future and bringing back solutions to current problems. And from my experience, you can really do that.
Mm-hmm.
I went with a clairvoyant group I was studying with to the year 2050 as a group, and we met historians coming back. We probably met midway, I would imagine, if there is a place to meet. But we met internally in the inner universe. And they answered questions about what was going to be in 2050. Now, as you know, there may be more than one world in 2050. I mean, there might not be. Who knows which world will end up in 2050?
Right.
Parallel universes being actually a scientific fact more than anything else. I was watching The Universe the other day on parallel universes and realized how much scientific evidence there is for that. It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we had this discussion, and I asked them about breast implants. And what they said is that breast implants don't exist in 2050. And this was back in 1990, by the way. This is a while ago, 20 years ago. So I asked them what they had, and they said, well, we have serial injections of something similar to glycoaminoglycans, and which is ground substance. It doesn't have any antigens in it. And then now in Europe, that's what they're testing. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
And then my book comes out, and it points out, you know, it's like the Emperor Has No Clothes book, you know, where I point out the scientific studies that everybody ignored and, you know, the whole picture, the clinical picture. I have about 2,000 women sick from their breast implants. So it's very interesting that I was given this insight that the future does not hold breast implants, that there will be significant problems, probably with biofilms and other scientific things that we can't get around, so that we're going to actually go to natural forms of enhancing breasts.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't we do that in a number of things? What, you know, I mean, breast implants, maybe on the scale of things, aren't very important to, you know, to the majority of people, but to the people that have them and get sick from them, they're very important.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know. So isn't that interesting that you can go into the future and then what was really interesting is I had a number of medical researchers that were plastic surgeons call me up who happened to be working on stem cells, and I shared this information with them, and they went on back to the lab to see what they could do. So consciousness even brought the scientists to me over the phone where I could say, hey, you know, why don't you go look at this?
Right, right.
And so, you know, if they're guided correctly, maybe they can be the ones coming up with the correct, you know, mix of things that will work.
Exactly, exactly.
So I think stem cells and glycoaminoglycans and even the patient's own fat is a source of the stem cells, because most women have a little bit of fat in certain areas, even if they're very skinny. So,
mm-hmm.
So that's an example of going into the future to solve a current problem.
And maybe that knowledge that you were able to access and retrieve is mm-hmm. what made the difference in the future.
It may be. It may be. I was spiritually guided to get breast implants. I was in meditation. I was in the military, so they were totally free. But I was spiritually guided to get them when I wasn't even thinking about getting them. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Yeah. So I think this is what I've told people. I said, whenever a problem is going to arise in consciousness, consciousness will at the same time create the solution to the problem at the same time.
Exactly. Exactly. Problems and solutions arise together.
They do.
From this
they
larger,
really do.
This larger reality.
Yeah.
Because from the larger reality, there are no problems and there are no solutions.
Right.
It's only,
all is one.
It's only unity. But when
that's
it bubbles
right.
up to the world that we live
that's
in,
right.
we see problems and solutions.
Yeah.
But to remember that they go together, I think, is an important thing for your listeners to see. It's like there's never a problem without a solution.
Right. So if we really know this to be the true nature of the universe, we need to get going. We need to start bringing together those people who can access this information, asking the right questions, bringing the scientists and the seers together, and quit spending so much money on stuff that doesn't work.
I agree.
You know, spend the money on the stuff that does work.
That's true.
Solve world hunger, you know, I mean, solve the problems rather
right.
than just, you know.
Right, very much so. And, you know, it takes a while for, you know, the leaders and the government to sort of catch on to this. But I think what's really catching fire at this point in our history is that a lot of these changes are happening from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really grassroots changes that are happening that you don't read about in the news. You don't read about or you don't see on the national news.
Mm-mm.
People are coming together and they're forming, you know, like you said, you know, these ion circles, these groups. People are, you know, naturally drawn together to look for solutions together. And I think it's happening more and more as time goes on. And so I think it's very hopeful.
What I'm hoping is that the children who are now entering their 20s and 30s who have some remarkable abilities to access the inner world will be guided into the correct positions of leadership and policy makers, you know, the things that are quite important in terms of direction of energy at the higher levels. Because eventually we've got to get to the basis of medicine, law, politics. I mean, we have to put people in those positions who understand the value of listening to within and being guided.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which one, but one of the people you interviewed talked about, let me see if I can remember the words, it's it's probably not the right words, but riding reality, like having a sense of being one with the universe rather than fighting for survival and, you know, being a separate. That's where we need to be. We need to be where we're just taking in all the information and then manifesting correctly so that we are, it's almost like an effortless, energy-efficient way of being.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's completely effortless because you're aligned with the universe. You're aligned with the natural flow of things. And as you point out, we really need to align these different fields of, you know, government, education, law, and politics with the natural flow of the universe. Because from that perspective, change will be effortless. I mean, it'll happen very, very naturally. And so I would say that most of our, you know, modern-day issues come from, you know, one, as we talked about, this belief in separateness and, you know, this need for deep alignment with the deeper levels of the universe. Because we're basically getting feedback from reality, you know, through ecological, environmental, political, and financial crises that we're not aligned with reality.
Right.
It's not working.
Right. So we're being forced to recreate everything at the level of the institution.
Yes. Yes.
Did you know that the first day that Pluto entered Capricorn, because it had been in Sag for 18 years, the very first day was that mid-September day in 2008 that the economic crash occurred.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it really was. Because in session, we meet every Sunday and have a session. We were told in late August to get out of the stock market because it was going to crash. And so, you know, there's the same thing. You know, people listening, especially coming together to listen. While your individual meditations are very important, I would really recommend when you're really ready to get into this work to meditate with a group. So you get information, like at the beginning of April in 2009, we were told that by the end of April we would be in a flu crisis. And it's not even flu season.
Right, right.
Isn't that interesting? So on the first day of the flu crisis, I had doctors from the NIH and the CDC in my office updating me on everything that was happening.
Oh, my.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. I just love to look around and see what happens, just be the observer and see what... It's just so much fun. But that's riding reality. That's the riding of the energetic waves rather than... You can picture yourself up on a surfboard riding the wave rather than down being tumbled and starved for oxygen, you know, like some of the humanity feels like right now, you know.
I know, and which one would we choose if we had a choice?
Yeah, really?
Yeah, because we do have a choice.
Well, we do. I think it's important for people to understand that if there was ever a time that they should pay attention to whatever their inner guidance tells them to do. And, you know, I don't judge one way or the other. There's no one right religion or spiritual approach.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people have spiritual experiences out on the golf course. I mean, I really do.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
they may not use those words, but, I mean, it's still, it's a
deep experience. It calms them down, makes them think how to run their company, doesn't it?
Exactly. That's right. I think people are naturally drawn to these kinds of situations.
They
are. They're open to that kind of guidance because it's relaxing and it's inspiring.
Yeah.
Yeah, and once again, it's returning to that relationship with the universe. It's realigning with the deeper currents of the universe. And that's just... Go ahead, I was just going to...
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say just one of the central insights that, you know, person after person I interviewed from the book is that we don't actually live in the universe. But we actually are the universe.
Right.
And, you know, it seems like it's just a change of a couple words, but it makes it entirely different. It makes it, you know, an entirely living difference that we are the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not, you know, it's not out there, but we are it, and it is us, and this is what's happening right now.
And there's a famous person who I can't remember the name of right now, who said, we do not see the world as it is, we see it as we are.
Yes.
And I would remind people that if they have all of the filters of prejudice, hatred, separation, judgment, they will project that world because they are the filter through which that hologram out there See, your hologram and my hologram aren't the same. They're just
right.
not.
Right.
And you have to respect that. Jesus came to teach, don't judge, because you do not have the same filters. If you have a rape early in your life, that changes your filters for the rest of your life. What does that do with trust? What does that do with your own sexuality?
Very much so. Yeah.
So we all have different filters, and we have to be respectful of the fact that we have different filters.
Yes.
And you know, the person dealing with all this heartache and hardship and, you know, everything might actually be way more spiritually evolved than I am, and I have a life of relative ease. Do you see?
Right. Right.
You have no idea what the soul contracts are. You have no idea what the how much is on that person's plate versus maybe you have the vacation lifetime, you know, where you get to just hang out and study and meditate and, you know, and have the money provided for you. So you can't judge. But I'll tell
no.
you something. As a physician, what I've seen people go through, because I was a trauma surgeon for about 26 years.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. You know, having to tell the mother that their child is dead in the ER.
Mm.
I mean, it's a significant exposure to what significant challenges patients have in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And really, what I think it comes down to is letting loose of anything that you're going to predicate your happiness on. You know, if you're going to say, if I just had the right relationship, I'd be happy. If I just had the right job or vocation, I'd be happy. If I just had the right material things, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
Because,
well, I was going to say, it reminds me of a quote I read once. Is we don't know if our current troubles are the secret beginnings of our happiness.
And so many cancer patients and other patients who were injured have told me that their whole lives have changed because of a single crisis that at the time they had no idea would be so significant. I was in Starbucks, and behind me was a CEO of a company who I'd treated 10 years earlier.
Mm.
He'd cut off the tip of his finger. And he said, Dr. Kolb, I just wanted to tell you that my interaction with your clinic, because I have a lot of materials out on, you know, spiritual medicine and everything. He says, just reading those materials and starting my own meditations. And he says, my company has significantly shifted because of this injury I had to my finger.
Wow.
So you never know. You never
yeah.
know how you will be influencing people. Your book, I mean, good Lord, your book, what will it go on to do?
Yeah, yeah. That's the butterfly effect.
It is.
We don't realize, you know, our actions may seem small to us, but they may have repercussions that can spread around the world and change who knows how many lives.
Right.
And once again, it's that idea of interrelatedness, that we're all interrelated together. I mean, we're all share the same future.
And what I like to do, you know, it's easy to interrelate to somebody like yourself. I mean, because we have similar ideas, similar, you know,
right, similar
practices, perspectives. But what I like to do is take people who are in conflict with me and interrelate with them.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's really a challenge. It's easy when somebody is similar to you, but when somebody's very different than you, when they're very prejudiced or when they're very angry or when they're they like to attack you, that's when I like to engage them. That's when I like to see if I can get into their beingness and then just shift it to a degree where they will then come up in energy, vibration, and understanding, comprehension, and you know, perhaps. Because isn't it true? I mean, we can be no better as a whole than the least of us are. And that's
absolutely.
Why Jesus had that quote, you know. We have to bring up those who are more negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when you're given the opportunity. I'm not saying go out and look for those opportunities, you know. But,
right,
but,
right.
but you see what I mean? When it's put in your path, instead of engaging in the battle between egos, for example.
Yeah, which isn't productive.
Yeah, you can be guided to have things turn so that they can maybe look at what they're projecting and give them an opportunity to change what they're projecting.
Yeah, and for me, it's an exercise in compassion. I mean, if I can
it is. Oh, yeah.
Really reach out and try to understand, well, how does this person see the world? You know, it might be entirely different than how I do.
What is?
It is, obviously.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
But it also might show me the limitations of my own worldview. It's like, oh, I thought this is how the world's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Well, clearly this person is in it.
Right.
Clearly that's possible, too. You know, how can I bridge my own gaps in understanding
exactly.
these kinds of interactions?
And I know that you if you haven't already, you will have the opportunity to do this because there will be scientists that come forth who have a very limited worldview but are absolutely sure that they're right. And perhaps challenge you on your book. You know, that is very possible. Just like medical doctors will come forth and challenge me on my book.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because we've taken a stand in terms of trying to synthesize, and this is what I love about my radio show. I call it synthesis medicine because I take things from many, many different fields of study. I mean, you would think we're out of healthcare, but we're really not with your book. Not at all.
No.
Not at all. And synthesizing everything together to try to find that unity.
Absolutely.
And that's what you did with your book. You synthesized across everything to come up with what is the universe, to answer that question.
Exactly. And that's what I'm encouraging people to do who read the book, is to go out and have these conversations on your own. In fact, people are doing it spontaneously. They're starting cosmic conversation circles.
Great.
Getting together, and they're just talking about, what do you think the universe is? Oh, what do you think it is? How do you bridge science and religion? And just the intelligence and the wisdom that comes from this kind of interaction and dialogue really is just amazing. It's almost as if together we're so much smarter than we are, you know, individually.
We are.
And, you know, so these kinds of circles have been a great success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm really promoting the idea of dialogue versus debate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's not bump egos, but let's actually explore together. Well, what's true?
Mm-hmm.
What's true for you? What's true for us? And what's reality?
Right.
And so I think the process of inquiry, this process of just asking questions and trying to find out, you know, what's below the surface, what's the deeper truth here, is, you know, as valuable as what's discovered. I mean, just, you know, how can we go deeper in our interrelatedness and in our relating to each other?
Well, what I see your book is taking us from humanity being the fish swimming in the ocean to actually understanding that the ocean is only one part of reality. There's also the sky. There's, you know, the things outside the, you know, the atmosphere. We have to, as a matter of the evolution that you and others speak of in your book, we have to shift our perspective, especially when our survival is threatened. I mean, that many people have said that, you know, nothing really gets done until there's a crisis, at least at our level of consciousness.
Oh, sure.
That may be true.
We need that. We need that kind of, you know, kick in the butt to kind of wake us up and get us moving. And, you know, one thing that came out of the book is all these authors are saying, you know, in the end, it's really up to us.
We can't look
for rescue from, you know, aliens or
aliens
or Jesus
or,
you know.
Yeah.
You know, in the end, we're making the choices we're making, and we decide what world we want to live in.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, collectively, we do.
I have an idea that if we are successful with this journey within, so that we can bring this knowledge, information, and everything back out into the hologram that we would call our external reality, that is probably the basis, doing that on the collective level, is probably the basis of what all the great religions and all the great prophecies have predicted that is coming up probably within the next decade.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the shift that when enough of us have gone within, perhaps huge flow of energy from internal to external world will occur. And then suddenly you'll have the 1,000 years of peace the Bible speaks of. You won't have to toil for a living, you know, like we've had to before. It's right. almost like reaching a critical point, because you understand this as someone who's studied physics. You keep putting energy into a system. You keep putting it in and keep putting in, and then there's a quantum jump in the atom to take that from one element to another.
Exactly.
But how long did the energy come in? And that's what I think, the energy is coming in from our inner world, but it will suddenly, like a quantum leap, occur where consciousness shifts into a much more, shall we say, pleasant and
right,
you
or
know,
coherent.
Friendly. You know,
yeah,
like.
exactly, yeah. And what you say is true. You know, in physics, it's called a phase transition.
Oh, there you
right.
go.
Exactly.
There you go.
You know, things seem chaotic. They seem more and more chaotic.
Right.
After a while, some kind of spontaneous order happens. And
right.
this happens in all kinds of, you know, systems in physics.
It
but
does.
It might also be happening in our consciousness. This might be the next stage in our evolution of consciousness.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that not everyone has to be on board. We only need, you know, a minimum critical.
Enough.
And once
right.
that happens, exactly, there's a cascade effect.
Yeah, there is.
And it affects
is.
Everyone.
There is.
And this is what these experiments with the Global Conscience Project and other,
it
you
is.
Know,
exactly.
experiments are predicated on, is that, you know, only,
yeah.
you only need a minimum number and the entire thing shifts.
Yeah, I love Laszlo's work. I think his stuff is great, and yeah, my joy is to study consciousness and to study especially how it relates to solving our practical problems. Because it's all very well and good to spend your life, you know, meditating and up on the mountain, but you know, the real challenge is bringing it back down to the city.
Absolutely.
And using it to, you know, when there's hectic fear, chaos, anger, and you know, looming significant problems, nuclear weapon proliferation, you know.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
oh, sure.
we've got, I have two relatives, my brother, who I told you about, who's an atmospheric scientist, and my cousin, who's a very prominent geneticist, who discovered that all the information from the mother comes from the mitochondria. So one day I called them both up and I asked them, well, how long do you think we have before humans are no longer on the Earth? And they both said less than 200 years.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Cause
it is. It is. Because, you know, they come from a place with Charles studying the atmosphere and the you know, the what's going on the planet, and is it survivable if we continue on the path we're on? And then the geneticist with you know, all of that information,
mm-hmm.
Can we reproduce?
Right.
I thought that was fascinating. I went, oh, my goodness.
Oh, good,
we
yeah.
better do something quick.
Only 200 years, Will.
200 years, that's not that many generations if all the women are waiting till 45 to have babies, you know.
That's true.
Generations are no longer 20 years, you know, because
exactly.
of economic things, really.
Right,
I mean,
right.
people decide not to have children, at least in the U.S., because of, you know, it doesn't fit into their life plan. So that's only four generations or five generations.
Wow.
I know.
It puts
a little bit of an impetus on let's get this thing straightened out. Yeah.
Exactly. We're ready for that next stage of evolution right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, would you like to give your contact information? I'm looking at your website now. Can you give that information?
Yeah.
And
any other
information that you'd like to give?
Sure. I think the best way to see what's happening is to look at my website, which is www.cosmicconversations.org, and people can contact me through the website. They can see what lectures and events are coming up, other interviews I have coming up, and find out more about the book and the people I interviewed for it.
So are you going to share some of this maybe with some of the consciousness organizations like Noetic Science? You know, they have national meetings. It's something
yeah.
you might consider, especially since you know Edgar Mitchell.
Well, sure.
Who founded Noetic Science, you know.
Exactly. And Dean Radin, and, you know, many people
yeah.
actually work
yeah, exactly.
you know, with Noetic Science. Yeah, I'd love
right.
to go to their annual meeting. And I'm hoping to do a short book tour in California in March. And
uh-huh.
maybe I'll be able to arrange a book talk at the Institute there, which is a wonderful facility.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, if you're ever in Atlanta, I'd invite you to call us. We have noetic science meetings, and we have, of course, I know the people in Atlanta that might be able to help you with the book tour.
That would be great, because I come down to, I have family in Blairsville in northern Georgia.
Oh, do you? Great.
I come down there, you know, a fair amount as well, so.
Well, make your trip into a business trip so you can tax deduct it. That's my advice.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Anyway, I really appreciate you being on with us. I have a few announcements. We've been interviewing Stephen Martin, who's put together a wonderful, wonderful book. Synthesis cosmology would be another term for it. It's called Cosmic Conversations, Dialogues on the Nature of the Universe and the Search for Reality. I think that people from all different spiritual orientations and even scientific orientations would be advised to read this book, because it will expand your understanding of the subject of what is the universe and what is our relationship to it. Next week, we have actually a book on plastic surgery. It's interesting. It's called Eat It Up, The Complete Mind-Body-Spirit Guide to Full Life After Weight Loss Surgery by Dr. Connie Stapleton. And then we were going to do your interview on the 13th, so I'm not sure what we'll have there, but we'll probably try to put back on Paul Radenmaker's book, Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed.
Mm.
And then on the 20th, Dr. Jonathan Ellerby, a CD called Your Spiritual Personality. And on the 27th, Michael Brown, The Presence Process, A Healing Journey into Present Moment Awareness. Which brings me to another thing, is that in your book, some of the authors were talking about the present moment awareness as being so important. And I think this is a good point to end on. There may not be anything other than the present moment. Would you like to share a little bit about that with our listeners?
Sure. Well, I mean, the present moment is where everything is happening right now. I mean, it's basically the universe in the process of manifesting, or, you know, universing, whatever the universe is.
Universing.
Whatever it does.
Whatever it does.
It does in the present moment.
Right.
And
right.
So when we're in the present moment, we're basically aligned with that process. We're aligned with the entire cosmos that we come out of. I mean, it's just spectacular.
And I would suggest that you really don't need to plan for the future, except if you're guided to do it within the present moment. I was at home visiting my mother, and I was coming up over the hill, and I had a really strong sense that I was going to be in danger in a few minutes. And what happened is, this is when the road is quite icy and visibility is very low. It was about 5 in the morning. A tanker truck comes off onto the highway, completely ignoring me, of course, and there's somebody right behind me. I come to a full stop in the middle of a major, highway, 6-lane highway, and the person behind me goes around, and the tanker trucker goes in front, and I'm not squished in between.
Wow.
So what I'd like to end up telling people is the present moment, paying attention to that guidance within the present moment, can very well save your life.
Yes.
And that's why I wanted to emphasize that, because we don't really need to plan for the future. We don't know what the future holds. Not really, not with all the things that science tells us about parallel worlds. You don't even know what parallel worlds you're going to end up in, really, if you think about it. So, and you don't even know how you shift between them, except in the present moment. But
right. You
can be guided in the present moment. And I think that if people really understood how much protection they do have, and that's why I want to encourage people to stay in the present moment, because that's where your guidance is. And so 5 minutes from now, what you're told now may save your life 5 minutes from now.
Yeah.
Or it may save your bank account. I got my money out of the stock market. My stockbroker called me and said, you're one of my own clients that made money. I went into some other things, you know.
Right, right.
So it can protect you financially. It can protect you physically. And, you know, it can protect, in this day and age, I think we all need to have the spiritual protection.
Yeah.
really do.
Yeah. I would just add one more thing, is mm-hmm. that whatever this universe is, we can trust it. We can trust
right.
the present moment.
Exactly.
It's going to carry us to where we need to go.
It is.
It's
and it's not
to...
it's not, you know, unfeeling and it's not a dog eat dog world that we've been, at least our parents were brought up to believe it was.
Right, that's the filter.
Right. The filter
right.
is changing.
Right.
And I would really agree with you that we live in a friendly universe, that we are very much a part of universing.
very much so.
Well, it's been fun universing with you today, Stephen.
It's been a pleasure
I appreciate
as well.
It.
Thank
this
you so
is
much.
Dr. Susan Kolb, Temple of Health Radio Show. Please also join us for our Noetic Science meeting, February, the 18th at the Dunwoody office. We will be talking about beginning a new chapter in your self-development. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk with you next week.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plasticos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plasticos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastico's made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastico's surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastico's?
Plastico's is in Dunwoody. Plastico's is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastico's number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute, you look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plastico's.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone, skin, and contour the body. Endermology by Plastico's feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plastico's, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plastico's at 770-457-4677. Plastico's Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.